Well, that didn't tell us much. That's one of my favorite lines from one of my favorite films, Gangs of New York. Shout out to anybody who knows which scene I'm alluding to. Did Anthony Yard manage to carve Alex Theran up like Bill the Butcher? Well, not really. Alex Theran turned up for a paycheck. From the opening bell, he was looking for a comfy spot on the canvas to lay down. He found the first excuse to lay down. I don't know how many seconds it was into the first round, but he got hit with a left hook to the body. And look, Anthony Yard is a big, strong, light heavyweight. He can definitely punch, but they didn't look. And when I say they, I'm going to talk about the second knockdown as well, which was also a left hook to the body. Neither of those shots looked or sounded like anything close to Anthony Yard's full power. They looked pretty innocuous, both those shots. And I know through experience boxing myself and watching boxing over the decades, if you hit a guy in the right spot in a floating rib, you don't even need to have that much power behind it for him to go down and not be able to breathe. But that's not what I saw here with Alex Theran. He went down voluntarily. He hadn't had the wind knocked out of his sails. He just turned up for a paycheck, like I say, to find a comfy spot on the canvas, and that's what he did. So, as I said at the start, that didn't really tell us much, did it? And what did it do for Anthony Yard to just get out against a pudding like that who didn't try and fight back? And actually, you know, the commentator on BT, there was Richie Woodall, then there's the other commentator. I can't remember what the other commentator's name is, but I really have to call both of them out for acting like this was some type of devastating knockout. Because that's how the commentators were acting, as if Yard did something spectacular to this guy. He barely touched the guy. And they were talking about, oh, he just couldn't take the Yard power. Are you serious? The guy turned up for a paycheck. He didn't even try. He went down at the earliest opportunity. As soon as he got caught with anything remotely clean, he was like, okay, now's my chance. Unbelievable. And what really was the icing on the cake with a cherry on top is when Theran was given oxygen. I mean, talk about theatrics. Giving this guy oxygen after taking those little taps to the body like that. Come on, bro. And like I say, Anthony Yard can punch, but that wasn't even close to the way he can really hit you in the body. Those were kind of like positioning shots where he was just trying to get the guy into the right position to then load up and land something more meaningful. And somehow this guy, or maybe it was the medical team, are acting like he needs oxygen after that. Jeez. I mean, that guy couldn't even qualify for shadow boxing in most gymnasiums, if that's how fragile he is. Dear, oh dear. Anyway, let's see what's next for Mr. Anthony Yard, whether he manages to secure that rematch with Lyndon Arthur, or he fights somebody else like, I don't know, a Callum Johnson. That's his stablemate. Even Hosea Burton, what's he doing at the moment? He hasn't retired or anything, has he? And who promotes him right now? Is he with Frank Warren? Is he with Eddie Hearn? I don't know who he's with. But that was a fight which Hosea Burton was really pushing for a couple years back. Maybe now would be the time to do it if he can't get that Lyndon Arthur rematch. There's also people like Craig Spider Richards out there. I believe he's an Eddie Hearn fighter, isn't he? I lose track sometimes. Eddie Hearn's got so many fighters, and many of them used to be with Frank Warren and other promoters. But I think Spider Richards is with Eddie Hearn, and of course he's got Joshua Boatse. So I don't know. Let me know what you guys think in the comments below, who you'd like to see Yard in with in his next fight, and who do you think is most realistic, because they might not be the same thing. Jake Paul defeats Tyrone Woodley on an 8-round split decision. Now, if you put aside the fact that Jake Paul is this multimillionaire, social media star, a troll, whatever you want to call him, put that all aside and just look at him as a novice professional boxer and look at the way his career has unfolded thus far, you can't really complain too tough. This guy had no amateur fights. And even for somebody that's had a lot of amateur fights, who do they fight for their first few contests? They fight absolute puddings for the most part. You do get some fighters, you know, like the Joe Joyces of the world, Vasyl Lomachenko, Artur Beterbiev, and so on, who get matched a lot tougher early on because they had so many amateur bouts. But even the majority of fighters who did have a lot of amateur bouts, they start off fighting soft opposition. So that's what Jake Paul had for his first few bouts, was soft opposition. And, you know, some people are going to say he was fighting people that had just the same amount of experiences as him. Experience, excuse me, as him. So is that really soft opposition? Well, yes, because the talent gap between him and the likes of Ben Askren, the likes of Anderson Gibb, who was the other guy? Was it Nate Robinson? Was that his name, the basketball player? These guys, in terms of boxing, technique, and talent, weren't in the same stratosphere, weren't in the same league, weren't in the same universe as Jake Paul, okay? However, this Tyron Woodley fight was the first fight in Jake Paul's career, four fights in, that he's fought somebody with a pulse. I'm not going to say the other guys didn't come to win, because they did. They just didn't have anywhere near the ability of Jake Paul. But with Tyron Woodley, it was different. And again, for his fourth professional fight, given his lack of experience, it's a decent opponent for somebody like Jake Paul, and a decent win. And again, I know some people are going to say, oh my gosh, Hatman, how can you be endorsing this fight? How can you be giving this guy any credit at all? Because as I say on my channel, and I've been saying this for years, no fighter is below praise and no fighter is above criticism. That includes Jake Paul. So the fight itself, I'd never watched Tyron Woodley. I saw a few highlights of him fighting in the UFC. I believe he's 39 years of age. He's still in very good shape. And apparently he had some amateur fights when he was young, but amateur fights, and I'm talking about boxing, which I assume he had when he was a teenager, don't really mean much when you're nearly 40 years of age and you've spent 15 plus years in MMA. And the reason I say that is because it's not just the technique that you learn in MMA. It's the way your mind works. It's the way your brain becomes wired to looking for particular things when you're in the octagon, moving in a certain way. You know, it becomes like reflex action. And so you have to reprogram your brain if you're trying to make the transition from MMA to boxing. Yeah, you have to reprogram the brain. If you've been doing MMA for that long and you're 40, more or less, you have to reprogram the brain to react the way a boxer would react in certain situations. So early in this fight, and all the way through the fight, but particularly early on, Tyron Woodley's stance was a good stance for a boxer, but he was struggling with the footwork. Now, some people say he was like this in his final few fights in UFC. So perhaps there's an age issue as well, not being able to pull the trigger because maybe he doesn't have the reflexes he used to have. But either way, you know, he's been out the ring for a long time. You're going to struggle to pull the trigger. And also, when you haven't been practicing the technique of cutting down the ring quickly, right? Closing down your opponent and then throwing punches after you move in. If that's not something you've been practicing for years and years and years and years, trying to pick it back up again when you're nearly 40 after being in UFC for however many years, it's difficult. Tyron Woodley is going to be more used to having the option of kicking a guy, of when he's in range and he can't get any punches off, shooting in to try to take the guy down. You see, the brain is wired differently when you've been doing that for several decades, as opposed to boxing, where you move your feet in quick, you know, move your head, and then you start throwing punches. You manage to set yourself very quickly to throw punches. It takes a different kind of balance to be able to do that. Not a better balance necessarily, a different kind of balance to be able to, you know, move in really quick, set your feet, throw big shots. Tyron Woodley just didn't have the, I'm going to say, the neurological program running. You know, it wasn't, his neurology wasn't trained enough to be able to move his body in that way. So he struggled to pin Jake Paul down, and he gave away several early rounds. Now, in the mid rounds, he did manage to finally catch up to Jake Paul. I guess he was shaking the ring rust off, and he was starting to find his timing, starting to find his range a little bit. And by the way, people are wondering why he wasn't throwing a lot of punches. It's because he didn't want to leave himself vulnerable. He only wanted to punch when he was sure he could land. He didn't want to be missing all over the place. And see, again, this goes back to what I just explained. His mind isn't wired to be as sharp at darting in with his feet and then letting punches go. Yeah, in that situation in the octagon, he might have gone for a takedown or kicked a guy, whatever the case may be. He had options. With boxing, there was only one option, throw punches. And he just wasn't sharp enough with that particular type of delivery system. Yeah, you need to train that into yourself for many, many years. In fact, it would be easier for a guy learning boxing for the first time, in some instances, to be able to do that because they haven't been trained to do anything else in that situation. Do you understand what I'm saying? They haven't been trained to shoot to take a guy down or, you know, leg kicks or anything like that. They've only been trained from the beginning to throw punches once you've closed the guy down. And I'm not talking about a complete novice. I'm talking about somebody who's maybe got, you know, a couple years of experience if they have sufficient talent. So Tyron Woodley was basically just struggling to close down the distance. When he eventually managed to find some range and timing, he landed some good shots, I think left hooks and a right hand, which shook Jake Paul. I'm not sure if Jake Paul actually tripped over Tyron Woodley's leg or somebody stepped on somebody's foot. I'm not sure, but it looked dramatic at the time when it happened. Jake Paul kind of reeled backwards and nearly went through the ropes, but managed to right the ship, stay on his feet, and then move around the outside of the ring. And it was significant that this was the first professional fight Jake Paul's had where he wasn't the aggressor. Tyron Woodley was the aggressor. And I think Jake Paul sensed from early on that Tyron Woodley was a lot more competent. Even though I've been talking about him not being the sharpest when it comes to closing down the distance and getting punches off quickly, his stance was still good. You could see the athleticism he had was superior to the guys that Jake Paul had fought previously, other than the basketball player. But, you know, basketball is very different to combat sports, and Tyron Woodley is a combat sports vet. So, yeah, he was much more athletic, definitely a lot more competent boxing-wise than the previous opponents. Jake Paul sensed that. Maybe he caught a couple shots on the chest or in the gloves and felt the power and thought, you know what, let me move around. And obviously, because he's the taller guy, you're going to try and utilize your height and your reach and so on. But he was the taller guy against Askren, wasn't he? He was the taller guy against the basketball player, right? But he didn't move around the ring with those guys, okay? Because he didn't sense from them what he sensed from Tyron Woodley. So, yeah, he sensed from Woodley that he was dangerous and competent. So Jake Paul started moving around and jabbing and trying to catch Tyron Woodley on the way in. And Jake Paul was picking some nice shots there, some left hooks, right hands, jabs here and there. I thought that at times he stood a bit too straight up when he was moving around. And it's okay to stand straight up if you're at the right range, but you need to be careful standing straight up like that, particularly when you're near the ropes. And he did that a few times. Yeah. If you're standing straight up and a guy's got you trapped near the ropes, you are a sitting duck. All right. So obviously Jake Paul's a novice, so you can't blame him for making certain mistakes, but I'm just saying moving forward, that's something he's going to have to work on and be cognizant of. So yeah, it was a competitive fight. I didn't score it round by round. After eight, the impression I had is that Jake Paul had just done a bit more than Tyron Woodley. And the judges saw it that way, although it was a split decision. One judge had it, I think, for Woodley by a round. The other had it Jake Paul by a round. And the third judge, I think, had it Jake Paul by four rounds. Correct me if I'm wrong. I certainly am not going to complain about Jake Paul getting the decision here. Tyron Woodley called for an immediate rematch. I can understand why he's calling for a rematch. Some people are saying he's just looking for another payday. Well, I'm sure the money won't hurt him. But more than that, I think he truly believes he would do better in a rematch. Because again, he's coming off a layoff. And I feel like he probably thinks he shook some ring rust off in that fight. I think during the actual fight itself, he felt like he was getting his range down. He was getting his timing down. And by the end of the fight, he was thinking, okay, I just need a few more rounds to get to this guy. I managed to hurt him in there. So if we can have a rematch, I'll be able to finish the job. See, this is how competitive people think. So yeah, I don't think it's just about the money. I genuinely do believe that Tyron Woodley believes that, again, if they run it back, he'll be able to win this time. Especially since this loss was only a split decision. I know most people think that, from what I've seen, Jake Paul won it and that the split decision was actually a bit generous to Woodley. Let me know what you guys think in the comments below. How did you score it? Again, personally, I didn't score it myself. I thought it was a pretty entertaining fight, and I've been on the record of saying that I think that these YouTubers turning their hand to boxing is a good thing. And I think that Jake Paul, Logan Paul, are good for boxing. I know some people are horrified when they hear me say that, but I've been watching boxing since the 80s, folks. I used to box myself. You can't tell me I'm some casual who doesn't know anything. No, I'm as hardcore as anybody. But the reason I like it is because, one, this entertaining fights, right? And for two, I think that this might actually force real boxers, quote unquote, and real boxing promoters and networks and so on to up their game. Because if Jake Paul, Logan Paul, and these kind of people are engaging in contests that get the public excited and get people talking, but real boxers are not, then maybe this will force the hand of the real boxers out there. And I'm talking about the likes of Errol Spence and Terence Crawford messing around, not fighting each other. I'm talking about the situation between AJ and Tyson Fury. And obviously, previous to that, AJ and Deontay Wilder. All this politics getting in the way. Yet, a YouTuber shows up like Jake Paul, you know, picks fights that people are somewhat interested in and the public want to watch. You know, Tyron Woodley versus Jake Paul is a good fight. So, again, if these YouTubers, at the end of the day, boxing is entertainment. That's all it is. If Jake Paul is entertaining people, then he's doing a good job, right? If the real boxers don't want somebody like a Jake Paul making incursions into their sport, maybe taking eyes away from their fights, up your game. Become more entertaining. And the primary way that you do that isn't necessarily trash talking and all this kind of stuff outside the ring. The best way to do that is give the fans the fights they want to see. If the real boxers give the fans the fights they want to see, they have nothing to fear from Jake Paul, Logan Paul, and all these YouTubers. They got nothing to fear from them if they give the fans the fights they want to see. So it's time for the real boxers. And look, we still get plenty of good fights. You know, I'm not one of these glasses half empty boxing fans. But there are certainly fights that we don't get. There's certainly a lot of unfortunate politics that goes on in the sport of boxing. And like I say, if they don't want to have these YouTubers boxing food out of their mouth, get the fans the fights we want to see. All right? That's my take on it. Jake Paul, I believe he's 4-0 now. There's talk of him fighting Tommy Fury. Tommy Fury did fight on the undercard. I haven't seen that fight. But when I do watch it, if I can get hold of a copy of it somewhere on the internet, then maybe I'll do a video and give you my thoughts on that as well. But I certainly like Jake Paul versus Tommy Fury, 100%. I've been endorsing that fight for, several months now? I really like that fight. Tommy Fury, as far as I'm aware, only had something like 10 amateur fights. Wasn't at a particular high level either. High level. So, you know, him and Jake Paul, I think they're relatively evenly matched. Yeah, Jake Paul, a few less pro fights, no amateur fights at all, but plenty of sparring in the gyms with pros, top pros at that, for Jake Paul. So, yeah, I like it. I think they are a similar age. I know they're a similar age. You know, talent, both guys maybe have a similar level of natural ability. So, let's see the fight. Let me know what you guys think in the comments below.
So, it seems I was right about the Canelo plant negotiations. In a recent interview on IFL TV, Eddie Hearn said if he had been involved in this particular round of negotiations between Canelo and Plant, the fight probably wouldn't have got made because PBC, Al Haymon, etc. don't like him. The inference being they would have just been deliberately as difficult as possible to try and sabotage the negotiations, which is really a damning indictment of PBC and Al Haymon. And you can go back on my channel and look at my videos from 4 or 5 years ago when Al Haymon and PBC first started out in boxing. I was extremely complimentary of what Al Haymon was doing, particularly with boxing being shown on all these different television stations in America, right? On network television, as they call it over there. Free to air. So people didn't have to pay. I was very, very supportive of that. But I'm not loyal to any promoter. I'm a boxing fan. I'm loyal to the sport. So whoever's doing the sport justice, I'm going to give them credit for it. But if there comes a time when they stop doing the sport justice, I'm going to call them out on it. It's just that simple. And what Al Heyman and PBC are doing right now is foul in many ways. Yes, foul. They're not doing the sport justice. They're not doing the fans justice by carrying on the way that they are. Thankfully, in this situation, Canelo, you know, he, I guess, got Eddie Hearn to sit on the sidelines or whatever, get Reynoso or whoever else in his team to do the negotiations. But apparently, Hearn is going to be at the fight representing Canelo in the capacity of, I don't know what, his unofficial promoter, because Canelo doesn't have any kind of long-term deal with Hearn, but he clearly likes him, right? He came out a few months back and said that Eddie Hearn is the best promoter in the world by far. So I guess Canelo understands that these guys are going to make it difficult to negotiate this Caleb Plant fight if Eddie Hearn's involved, you know? Weird stuff like that. Like, when Al Heyman first started out in boxing, he was suffering this type of treatment, right? From the likes of Bob Arum and Oscar De La Hoya. In fact, didn't they team up and try to sue Al Heyman for breaching the Muhammad Ali Act? Something like that. I know Arum tried, but wasn't De La Hoya Golden Boy part of that as well? To be fair, when it comes to Golden Boy, you could see why they might want to go at Al Heyman, because he took all their fighters. You know, he was signing their fighters while they were still with Golden Boy. And then all of a sudden, it almost seemed like overnight, he left. And he was no longer associated with Golden Boy, but all or a lot of Golden Boy's fighters went with Heyman. So you can understand why Golden Boy would be mad and try and go at him, but with Bob Arum, I mean, look, it's business at the end of the day, so there's going to be competitive and all this kind of stuff. Competitive is fine as long as it's benefiting the fans. When you start having these cold wars, that's what they used to call them a few years ago, these cold wars, right? Where you're not having that many cross-promotional fights, particularly when you're talking about the premium fighters. Yeah, they might let some of their lower-level fighters go over and fight on different networks against, you know, rival promoters, cash cows in some cases. But when it comes to their premium fighters against the other guys' premium fighters, they're very selective about when they do that. And in many instances with PBC, they've sabotaged those situations. It's crazy. Not only are they doing the fans a disservice, they're doing their own fighters a disservice many times. We saw that most famously with, you know, apparently PBC, Al Heyman, whoever it was over there, getting Kalnacki to turn down the AJ fight, getting Luis Ortiz to turn down the AJ fight, and getting Deontay Wilder to turn down over $100 million deal for the Undisputed fight. That's crazy. And he turned down multiple offers before that as well. He also turned down multiple offers to face Dillian Whyte. And at the time, they would have been career high paydays. Let's not forget that. So, yeah, weirdo, off-key behavior by PBC. Deliberately sabotaging an Undisputed fight, or potentially, right? Not saying they did, but that's what Eddie Hearn is suggesting, that they would have just made negotiations impossible just because he's involved. They seem to be far more concerned about what's best for their network, what's best for their brand, rather than what's best for their individual fighters or what's best for the sport of boxing. Because they're thinking, okay, if we let our premium guy go and fight their premium guy and our guy loses, we don't have plausible deniability at that point to claim that our guy is the best in the division. So what we'll do is we'll avoid that fight altogether. We'll have him fight other people, and then we'll try and con the public into thinking our guy is better than their guy without actually having to fight their guy. This is what they've done with so many fighters over the years. Terrible. Let me know what you guys think in the comments. I'm out.